This week, the Clarets pick up a vital 3 points at home to a Fulham side also battling the drop. This is the None and Ever podcast. Hello and welcome to the None and Ever podcast. Natalie here, just leaving Turf Moor. Yay, we did a win! 2-1. What a fantastic result, albeit maybe perhaps not the second half performance that we were looking for. But you know what, a win's a win. That's three back-to-back league wins, and both the league table and the season as a whole, it's got a very different, oh God, it's absolutely throwing it down, I'm sorry guys, an absolutely very different perspective than it did 3 games ago. Not a great start, obviously, for ridiculous Shirley goal in, what was it, under 2 minutes? So a lot of question mark around the ground whether he was offside. I haven't seen it back yet, so I don't know if he was. But I think reports online are suggesting that Tarkowski played him onside, but it was a ridiculously brilliant strike, and I'm not really sure any of our goalkeepers could have saved that. And it kind of stunned us a little bit, I think. We hadn't really yet started the game by the time we were 1-0 behind, and both the ground, the fans and the bench and the players all looked a little bit stunned. But you've got to say, credit where credit's due, they came back into that game very, very quickly. And then we went on an own goal rampage. I want to say a quick word about Jeff Hendrick, because he's often the fall guy for fans, and a lot of people treat him as a little bit of a scapegoat. I thought he was fantastic today, quite possibly one of the best performances that I've seen Jeff Hendrick play. And he was just creating things, and he was making things happen in the box. He was credited in the ground for scoring twice, but I think, in all fairness, both were, well, certainly the first one, the second one might not do, but will go down as own goals. But without his shots and his creativity, the defenders wouldn't have had a chance to put it in the back of their own net. Where does that lick us up to? Half time, I think we were really dominant. Actually, I was really pleased to see us going in at half time. Second half, not quite the same intensity, I didn't think. It felt very much like Dyche had made the tactical decision to defend that fine margin of a one goal advantage rather than really push it forward and trying to kill the game. We know Dyche does that quite a lot. He doesn't like to see us exposed and potentially lose a game, but it was kind of frustrating because this was one of those games where we could really have killed it off very, very quickly and racked up a comprehensive win and maybe even done something to try and reduce that goal difference that we've got. But you know what, they dug deep, they got it in the end. Heaton pulled out a couple of fantastic saves in that second half, and we got the job done. I thought that the discipline in the last 5 minutes, especially and into extra time, was really professional to make sure that they didn't get any chances really late on that could have gone in. And yeah, so there we go, three back-to-back wins. Burnley clawing themselves further away from that relegation zone, and we go to Watford next week. So let's see what the guys, the rest of the team say. We'll be back in studio mode Monday night, and I will pick up Paul with you then.
And indeed, just like magic, here we are back in studio mode. Natalie, I'm with you again after that immediate post-match reaction. And now back in the studio, I am joined by Statman Dave. Stat, good evening. Stat? Dave? I'm actually going to start calling you Stat. That's not good. Dave, good evening.
I've been called worse. Good evening, Natalie.
Good evening. And as a special treat this evening, we are joined by the usual quiet, shy, in the shadows producer, Matt. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. Yes, we're all good, thank you. It's very nice to have you. It's very nice to have you on this side of the microphone for once, rather than having to edit all of my little notes. I think at the end of each show, I have to send Matt a little note saying, editing notes, I messed up on this time and this time, and please can you cut that sentence out because I said something stupid. So Matt is most definitely my savior when it comes to editing and producing the podcast. So immediate post-match reaction out of the way. As you can tell, I was cold and wet and out of breath leaving Turf Moor, but very, very ecstatic with a really, really important win. Before we go any further, just to keep in that theme of, I guess, immediate reaction, Dave, Matt, Dave, you go first. Like, what was your immediate feeling coming off the turf on Saturday?
I was happy with the result. I think we ground out the result in the end. It was good to see that Burnley had managed to come from behind again. We haven't done it too many times in the Premier League since we got promoted, but that's twice in two games, which is the first time we've done it back-to-back, which following on from Huddersfield, and particularly against the two opponents and where they are in the table, it was vital. So, yeah, delighted with another win and three on the spin.
What about you, Matt? What was your immediate thoughts coming away from the game?
Well, when they went a goal behind so early on, my heart kind of sank and I thought, is this going to be one of those afternoons where we huff and puff for 88 minutes and come away with nothing? And, you know, it's strokes of luck in some respect to get back into it and then to get ahead, but probably deserved as well for the pressure they were putting on. And yeah, it, like you said, it was absolutely vital, really. I know you talked about last week the fixture list that we've got between now and the end of the season. And these are the games where you have to take 3 points because there's enough games in there where the likelihood is that we won't take any points. And for as good as we're playing, we still need a lot of points.
Yeah, we definitely do. That game on Saturday marks three back-to-back league wins, which at some points this season, I don't think any of us saw this team being able to do. And it's catapulted us into 15th in the table. And, you know, there's 3 points between us and Newcastle in 18th. And it just feels at the moment like there's much more positivity around the ground. And I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if we went away to Watford and got something there. Matt, let's stay with you just while you're on that one, because you raised a really good point there and you started to talk about that early goal. And I think I shared your initial concern with just it happened so quickly in the game, did that Shirley goal. And I don't think we necessarily had got our heads in gear in the opening stages of the game. We hadn't quite switched on yet. And it was frustrating to see us concede such an early goal, especially when it throws your game plan completely out the window. But Matt, it was such a beautiful strike. I'm not entirely sure that many teams or any keepers are going to stop that, are they?
No, they're not. There's no stopping that. I mean, you know, he is a World Cup winner and he has amassed the transfer fees of over 70 million, I think I read on Twitter today. So there is a reason why they brought him in the summer, and there's a reason why he's scored against us twice now. He is world class when he wants to be. It was a lovely ball down to him. You know, we look at our defence and ask the questions of the defence. Tarkowski was just a little behind playing him on. And I thought that Ben Mee was a bit slow to react, really. I think, you know, he could have sped up when he realised that he was onside. And then when he gets that touch and controls it, for me, Mee is still moving a bit slow, really. He's not moving fast enough to get in between the man and the goal. So, yeah, on the centre-backs, I think, could both have done a bit more there. They were certainly not at full match speed. And it just gave us, you know, a bit of a hill to climb, really.
I did see a lot of talk on social media after the game, Matt, just people talking about, actually probably during the game, people talking about how wasted Schürrle is in that Fulham side and how it's kind of incredible, really, that he hasn't been snapped up by one of the top sides. It feels a little harsh on Fulham, does that? Because I think they did build themselves a pretty decent squad before the season started. But I guess maybe now we're starting to come towards the end of January and it's looking pretty bleak for Fulham. It does look like they probably will go down. Do you expect anybody to come in and try and pilfer him off them?
I think if he does enough to put himself in the shop window, if he gets, you know, a few more goals before the end of the season, then yeah, there's always going to be people sniffing around him. I'm not entirely sure of his age off the top of my head, and, you know, whereabouts he is in his career, but a World Cup winner who can, you know, can do stuff like that is always going to be of interest to clubs. Just a shame, you know, it wasn't somebody that we could go in and get, because it's the kind of player that we could certainly do with.
God, yeah, we really could, especially scoring goals like that. I'm pretty sure it was probably outside of our price range, both in transfer fees and in wages, I think. But just to clarify that, Matt, I mean, do you think there's any chance that somebody could come in January and take him, like now?
I don't think so. I certainly haven't seen him making enough headlines this season to warrant a way out. And I think Fulham would be keen to keep him because he is one of their bright sparks in attack, and they're still fighting, and there's still a chance that they could fight their way out of it if they could put together a run of games like we have just done. So I'd be surprised if he went, but I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in the summer should they go down.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely go if they go down. But there you go, Fulham fans. The voice of reason from producer Matt, you're going to keep hold of him until at least the end of the season. Dave, just looking at the technical points of that goal and something that Matt just touched on a minute ago, I did wonder at the time whether our defence looked a little bit static. And it was really difficult to see in real time because it did look like it was just a phenomenal pass and something that had taken our defence completely by surprise. But when you look back at the replays after the game, I think you've kind of got to question Tarkowski's sharpness. The rest of the back four keep playing completely offside and keep the line really well. And it's Tarkowski that just drifts forward and pretty much half his body is playing him massively onside. Do you think he can maybe do better there?
I think first and foremost, we've got to say it was a fantastic goal. The control, the way he brought the ball down was really impressive so early in the game to have the concentration to do that. I guess, yeah, if you've been ultra critical, you can say that, pick the bones out of the defensive performance there. But I think it's one of those where, in terms of the percentages, the number of times that ball's going to be brought down and hit on target like it was is in, fractions of percentages. So it's perhaps a little bit harsh to then, once the goal goes in, to lay the blame totally at our defenders' doors. But I'm sure they'll question themselves. They'll after the game, that'll be something that they'll be looking at. And it's not the first time I've been caught cold in a game. What I was pleased by, actually, was the way we recovered from that. I think the crowd certainly stayed on side. The vocal support continued after that early goal. And the players got down to it and got back into the game. And Jeff Hendrick seemed to be driving a lot of that. And he was involved in both of Burnley's goals.
Well, let's stick on with that then, Dave, because I think one of the things that I was really impressed with was the very quick shift in attitude that the Burnley side showed from going that goal down so early on in the game. I did feel a little bit like I've been punched in the stomach when that first went in. And like both of you said early on, I was a little bit worried about whether we had the ability and the resilience to get back into the game as quickly as we did. But it really seemed to give them the rocket that they needed. And I agree with you, Dave. I think the crowd had a huge part to play in that as well, in that everybody was suddenly, actually, no, come on, let's wake up, let's go on this. And number one, I think that's not something we've seen all this season. It's certainly a characteristic that we showed last year, but maybe not so much this year. But it came from, like you say, a very unlikely source in Jeff Hendrick, who just went on a one-man mission in that first half. I mean, that's the Jeff Hendrick that we've been waiting to see for ages, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's, again, not in the position we'd necessarily expect to see him playing in. He's played in just behind the striker. He's been brought into the side this time in a wide position. And he's done a job. I mean, he's got those shots towards goal. There's been too many games where we haven't been in those positions and shooting towards goal. Yeah, we got a little bit of luck. The first goal, I think it's debatable whether it was going in or not. It hasn't been given to him yet. It may be changed at a later date. The second one was definitely going wide and was definitely an own goal. But again, if you're not getting those shots in and in those positions to take those shots, you're not going to get those chances. So we had a little bit of luck, yeah, but I think that the positive play, the positive attitude going forward was promising, and it did seem to be Jeff Hendrick behind quite a lot of those chances.
What did you think of it, Matt? I mean, like you say, it's not been that often this season that we've seen players running into the box and trying to create something. And whilst, like I say, that both of the goals were given as as own goals, it's you've got to give pretty much all the credit to Hendrick for those chances, don't surely?
Yeah, you do. He was very bright and very direct. He certainly wasn't the Jeff Hendrick that we saw against Barnsley the week before. It was like a different player, really. But it was good that he seems to have looked around him and gone, well, we've got no Brady, we've got no JBG, we've got no Defoe. Someone's got to get hold of this ball and drive it forward and just put it in the box and see what happens. Because against a team like Fulham, something's going to happen. You know, there's a reason why they've shipped so many goals and they're in the position they are. So it was very promising to see that. Yeah, he was playing in a position where he's been slated, you know, so much in that kind of a more attacking midfield role. He seems to get more criticism there than praise. He seems to get praise more when he's in a more of a defensive midfield role. So it was good to see him getting praise for that position and to just be direct, because, you know, we've been screaming out for it for half a season. Just put the ball in there and see what happens. If the ball's not in there, it's never going to go in the back of the net. So, yeah, it was great to see that from him.
And I think as well, it just makes a difference not shoving him in that number 10 role, which he can't play in, which Dyche has insisted. I've got to say, I was pretty pleased to hear the praise that Dyche poured on Hendrick after the game. But more importantly, the acknowledgement from Dyche that they do ask an awful lot of Hendrick. And he was pleased himself to see it pay off for him and for him to deliver that performance and create those goals. Hendrick has become a real fall guy amongst Burnley fans. I think a lot of people are frustrated with the lack of creative spark that we've maybe seen from him. And a lot of people have questioned just what he offers to the side and what he brings. And I've always really defended him on that basis. Defended him on the basis that Dyche has often played him as a makeshift player and you know, put him in positions that is just not his natural position and what is not trained and developed to play to the best of his ability. So to hear Dyche come out and say that they do ask a lot of him and how delighted he was to see it pay off today, I think was really, really nice of him to do. And I really felt for him. It definitely belonged to Hendrick did the day. I actually thought at the end that he was a little bit robbed of the man of the match performance. I think there were probably only Westwood and Hendrick that could have put a claim to it. But for me, it was very, very, very close. I thought Westwood was absolutely superb. And I think I would probably just edge Hendrick because he did score the two goals as well. So quick fire to both of you. Dave, would you have gone Hendrick or Westwood?
Westwood.
Matt?
I think I would have gone with Hendrick. I think, you know, for all the good work that Westwood has been doing in these matches, Hendrick, like you say, he had a hand in both goals. So yeah, I think he would have got my nod.
See, 2-1 to Hendrick. Dave, you lose. Sorry. let's stick at the moment on the own goals, because what has been dominating the press since the game, which for some reason Optostats hate us and everybody seems to like to highlight really horrible stats about us. We are the first team since 2004, and Statman Dave will hopefully correct me if that's wrong, or maybe we're the first team ever, actually, to score. What's the stat, Dave? Games with no shots? I don't know what it is. I'm making this up.
It's happened a few times. I'm not sure the stats actually go back that far. I think it did say since 2003-04. It's happened, I think, four times previously. It was on Match of the Day. I think I took a screenshot and tweeted it out. It's happened four times before where teams haven't had a single shot on goal, but have still won a Premier League match. But the previous four occasions were all by 1-0 scoreline, whereas Burnley winning is the first time it's happened with a team scoring twice without a shot on goal, obviously winning 2-1 in the game. But I think that may well still be from 2003. I don't think the stats are maintained the same way for matches prior to that. I think Opta probably only got involved from that time onwards.
It did feel a bit like football didn't exist before the Premier League when they put those statistics out on Saturday, I must say. But I imagine a lot more came in at the time of the launch of the Premier League in terms of analysis. But I did look at it on Saturday and go, oh, surely people have scored more own goals in the past than that.
Well, you know, if you watch any news channel these days, it's number one, football didn't exist before the start of the Premier League, and football outside of the top six of the Premier League is also irrelevant. So I think that's pretty clear. I've got to say, though, regardless of that stupid stat, I refuse to acknowledge that we didn't have a shot on goal, because Jeff Hendrick's first goal is absolutely not an own goal. It's absolutely Hendrick's goal, and therefore constitutes a shot on target. Dave, do you agree?
Well, I think we'll put it to the Harry Kane test. I think if Harry Kane had taken the shot, would it have been credited to him, and would he have been claiming it? So on that basis, then, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's two. Matt, what did you think? I mean, I every time I see it, and there's quite a lot of graphics, this is one of the benefits of modern football, is you can see, you know, it leaves his foot and it's going directly into the net, so it doesn't need to be deflected off the defender to go into the back of the net. So surely that's got to count, yeah?
Yeah, I think match of the day drew us a handy little arrow showing the projected path of the ball just nestling inside the far post. So, yeah, I think in real time, whoever sits there, I don't know, Dave might know how these how the statistics get kind of recorded as the match goes along, but you could be forgiven for thinking it was off target during the match. But surely these things that then must get corrected afterwards, and the player should be rewarded a goal. I mean, my Harry Kane test goes back to the one that went in off his bottom in the World Cup and gave him a hat-trick in that game. So if he gets that one, then surely Hendrick should get this one.
You've just completely distracted me now, so I'm not really sure that that's maybe a visual that I needed reminding of on this Monday night when I'm trying to concentrate on the podcast. Dave, I think you were giving us a nudge then. Did you want to add something to that point?
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of the process, I think the way they do it is what the Press Association records on the day of the match, and they gave it as an own goal. What happens then is there's a dubious goals panel that sits from time to time, and they review any controversial goals either way, in terms of, you know, was it a different player that touched the ball on the way through, like the Harry Kane goal I was referring to, or the instance like the Jeff Hendrick one. But it's not something that sits every week or every month. It's just from time to time as they see fit. So I guess it depends when they reconvene as to whether that will change. But I guess we'll see it on the Premier League website as and when it changes, and it'll be be mentioned in the news and on social media too.
The better I'd do, or I might have a rant at them. I've not had a good rant for ages. I might take this on personally and see if he'll do it. So for all the good that the first half was, and obviously that the buoyant atmosphere at half time, wasn't quite the same level of intensity in the second half. This was a game that I think was very much labelled a game of two halves. Dave, I'm not really sure what happened at half time, because to me, it was a completely different attitude in the second half. The players looked nervous, and I don't know whether or not Dyche had somehow either communicated explicitly or implicitly that, you know, they had to protect this lead as much as possible. But there were times in that second half we weren't even trying to score, and it was a really nervy performance, and one that very nearly let Fulham back into the side. Game, even. Not back into the side, definitely back into the game.
Yeah, there were once or twice, one or two times in the second half where the strikers in particular fluffed the lines. Was Barnes and Wood weren't quite communicating as well as you would have hoped. And we didn't really create that much in the second half, but we soaked up the pressure well. I thought that, it was a game of two halves. Burnley were not as fluent in the second half as they had been after the Fulham goal in the first half. And that momentum that we had going into half time just didn't continue afterwards. But I thought that at the end of the day, it's a professional job. We got the result. And again, that's the main thing. I think I look back and in terms of other performances, we had the 2-1 win against Cardiff, and that was more of a maybe undeserved result than the one on Saturday against Fulham. I thought on the balance of the game, even though we had the luck and the own goals, Burnley did really deserve it, but it was based on pretty much the performance in the first half rather than anything we did in the second.
Yeah, I think one of the key points as well to that second half performance was definitely some defending that needed to be done, and for maybe some criticism that our defence has had this season. My goodness, did they help us get those 3 points. Matt, two things particularly in that second half that our defence did well. I think Heaton pulled out a pretty decent save, which was quite close range. But can we just talk for a minute about that Tarkowski block off the line? Oh my God. I mean, I don't think we've seen that at Burnley since Ben Mee put his head to that foot a few seasons ago. It was pretty exceptional, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, his awareness to be back there and just the reactions to be as reactive as a keeper and in the conditions as well, really, you know, his foot could have gone anywhere. He could have slipped. He could have ended up on his rear end with the ball in the back of the net looking rather foolish. So there's a few kind of points in that as well, in what he did. There was obviously an element of luck, as there are in any blocks like that. But and Heaton's reaction is just kind of adds to it and makes the whole thing 10 times better, in my opinion. It just sums up exactly why he's keeping his spot there.
Yeah, it really did. And I've got to say, I don't want to dwell on this because we've done the Heaton versus Hart debate to death recently, and a lot of people have been proved right in that there was a personality problem. Whether this is right or wrong and whether the players should be doing this, you cannot hide the camaraderie that Tom Heaton has got with those defenders in front of him. Even Taylor now, who he hasn't played with for a significant amount of time, he just gets them. And it's little things like the save a couple of weeks ago, Ben Mee was in his face and high-fiving him and fist-pumping him and really congratulating him on an amazing save. And we saw it again, as Matt just said, when Tarkowski made that block. Heaton's turn around and is in his face straight away, like pointing at him, going, "Yes, you, that's amazing." And even when Hart pulled out some fantastic saves this season, nobody really reacted, and you didn't seem to get that high fivery going that clearly these boys have got and the relationship they've got. So, you know, whilst we don't necessarily want to dwell on the Hart problem, it was very nice to see our captain back, and that kind of good feeling has got to emulate, is that the right word? I feel like I'm struggling with words tonight. I feel like I'm saying words that either don't exist or perhaps mean something very different to that. This is the problem that we get with recording on a Monday night after work, is that my brain's a little tired. Resonate, I think maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Tom Heaton's, you know, his leadership skills and his happiness resonates across the team, and it's got to have a positive impact. Robbie, who is rubbish and has left us again this week, because I don't even know where he is. He was missing last week as well, and I think he's gallivanting somewhere. I think he's that down south in that there London. I don't really know. I hope he's back next week. He's kind of left us for a while. I hope he's not quit permanently. If he has, he hasn't told us. But he did contact me after the game, and we were talking about Tarkowski. And Dave, I don't know if you think this is fair, but he was really just getting so giddy about that Tarkowski block. And he actually said, "You know what, Tarkowski's far too good for us." Now, as much as we don't want to think about that, is he probably the one player in our squad that we may be very vulnerable to lose in the summer?
Possibly. I mean, we're in a position where we don't have to sell, but that's not to say that players don't have their price at any club. I mean, that's the case anywhere in the league, pretty much. It was interesting as well, wasn't it? Gareth Southgate was there watching the match on Saturday. Obviously, quite a few players that he could have been keeping an eye on, James Tarkowski being one of them, Tom Heaton possibly as well, and you know, players on both sides that he could be considering for future squads. But yeah, I mean, he's one of those players that catches the eye, and it wouldn't surprise you if at some point there was interest. I mean, there may well have been interest already we're not aware of. There was the story that came out about Liverpool, which was quickly denied by both sides, Liverpool, and then also Sean Dyche in one of his press conferences said there'd been no contact about it. But yeah, it could happen. I mean, we're vulnerable to it with any player. The amount of money going around and the amount of wages that are possible at some of the teams in the Premier League who have far bigger resources than Burnley means that there's always a possibility that players will be tempted by bids from elsewhere, and we'll just have to wait and see on that. I mean, perhaps less likely in the January window, It's one of those where in the summer there might be interest being increased from elsewhere, and we'll just have to take that as it comes.
Yeah, it's a funny one, really, because I think if you look at the players that we've got now and the squad we've got, I don't think we've ever had such quality in every single position. And quite frankly, this is the best squad we've ever had. But for the first time in ages, I'm not immediately worried about clubs coming in and trying to steal all our best players off us. You know, in seasons previously, either through a financial need or through a star that we've had in the ranks, you've always been very nervous in transfer windows and worried that our star player is going to go. But I don't feel like that at the moment, even though we've got the best players that we've ever had. And I do wonder whether we've got a batch of very stereotypically Burnley players that maybe don't necessarily suit the style of play that other Premier League clubs have. We are quite unique in the way that Dyche has set us up and the way that we address games. So maybe that's helping us to keep, you know, some of our star players there. But Tarkowski is definitely one that I'm a little bit worried about. I'm not worried about Liverpool because I think this is maybe the third transfer window in a row where he's been linked to Liverpool. And I just don't see him spending that money on him. And that's absolutely no offence to Tarkowski. But they're looking in the Van Dijk quality of defenders, and Tarkowski's just not there yet. That's not to say he might not get there, but I feel like there's a snobbery among some Liverpool fans. I just don't think they'd be particularly pleased with that signing. I'm just going to hold that thought, you two, because I'm going to come back to transfers in a minute. I just want to just finish off the Fulham game. I think, Matt, you wanted to have a quick word, didn't you, about the Taylor penalty appeal, which was after the Tarkowski shot block. Now, I'm not sure I saw this during the game, and I haven't seen it in any replays since. So I'm going to hand over to you to discuss this point, because I don't think I remember which bit you're talking about here.
Yeah, so there's a moment, I'm actually just trying to find it back on the Clarks Player highlights to watch it a second time. There was a moment, I think he made it come from a corner, a second phase from a corner, where basically Taylor goes, and I think he slips actually, he's not far inside the box, kind of just to the left-hand side of the D, and I think he does slip, which then turns it into a challenge, which I don't think gets a touch on the ball, really. And I think we're very lucky. I don't know whether the referee maybe just gave him the benefit of the doubt with the conditions or what, but it was just, you know, it was probably, you know, the biggest shout Fulham had in for a penalty, certainly in the second half with all the pressure they were given. It felt in the second half that we rode our luck in various ways, not just with the Tarkowski block and with Tom Heaton's saves. They were just launching the ball into the box as we had done in the first half. And it could have been, you know, we could have been on the other end of a 4-2 defeat, really, on another day. So, it was just, for me, a moment where the game could have turned and we could have, you know, coming away with only a point.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that in the day. And I wonder whether my seat's at the opposite end. It's towards the Beale end in the James Hargreaves. So it's just like way at the other end of the pitch. And I just wonder whether I just didn't see it. I think I've got a great people who sit around me at Turf. I love the people who sit around us. But they are real pains for standing up anytime anything happens down at the cricket field stand. And I'm 5'2" and maybe a quarter. I don't even think I'm a half. So I often can't see when people stand up. So I think I just missed it. But like you say, Matt, we rode our luck in so many ways. And I think we are very lucky that Fulham side is as fragile as it is at the moment. I feel like they are playing some really attractive football, Fulham, but I'd question whether they've got the nitty-gritty to do the ugly side that's needed in these last 16 games to get survival. Burnley, as we know, have now clawed themselves, got a little bit of daylight between the bottom three and ourselves in 15th. We are by no means out of danger yet. But I think, Dave, the outlook's looking a little bit more positive for the rest of the season, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, three wins in a row helps with that. We do have to sound a note of caution as well, I think, though. I was looking back at comparing previous seasons, and we were way behind all the other seasons in terms of the same stage points. When you look at where we are now after 22 matches, we've just gone back ahead of 2009-10 and also 2014-2015. We've got one more point now after 22 matches. We're on 20 points in both those seasons after 22 games. But we have to remember those two seasons. Yeah, we had particularly 2009-10, a very poor end to the season. 2014-15, again, we were having to grind results out and never really got there. But both those seasons were ones that ended in relegation, and Burnley are just 1 point ahead of both those. So we know we've got a lot of work to do still in the second half of the season. It's possible, not certain, that the points required for this season, the total required to get to 17th place, will be lower than in previous seasons because of the way that the top six appear to be a lot more dominant. When you get teams at the top who are far and away ahead, then it means that total tends to go down. We tend to see that the number of points required for survival is lower. And it may well be that 34, 35 points might be enough. But that still means that Burnley are probably going to have to find either four wins and several draws, or five wins and maybe a draw to get to that level. So there's a long way to go. We looked at the running last week, didn't we? We went on the podcast, and particularly those last four games, three of those four are against teams in the top six. It's a real tough running. So we look at games coming up. We've got Watford away and then Southampton at home, obviously Manchester United in between there. Particularly the Watford and the Southampton games are going to be ones where we need to continue the form we've shown the last three games and try and get some more points on the board, because that will take the pressure off.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's suggesting that we are out of the woods yet. I think it's pretty clear that we need to get some more points. I'm really, really worried about our running towards the end of the season. Our last six games particularly are just horrendous. So we have, and our last four are potentially 0 points from four. So effectively, we have to consider that our season will probably finish four games before everybody else's does. And we have to get the points on the board then. Looking ahead to the rest of the season, I mean, there's not really been any transfer news yet, not even any speculation either. It feels like it's been very quiet on the transfer front for now. But we had an email in from John Taylor this week, who wanted us to have a quick look about the possible transfers coming in. And he did say, the common view seems to be that we need a new winger. I think most of us have probably accepted that. He says, we already have four wide players, JBG, Lennon, Brady and McNeil. Obviously, we have a short-term issue due to injuries and a daft suspension. I love that. But if we get a new winger, who is going to lose out when others become available again? Based on past selections, it will be McNeil. Is that really what we as fans want? So thanks for your email, John. Matt, I'm going to send that over to you. He's got a point, hasn't he, that, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a shortage of wide players. We know we've got four in there, and actually McNeil's proved to be a bit of a bonus one, because when in earlier parts of the season we were crying out for a winger, that was before McNeil really cemented himself as one of the first choices for the team. But I think it's not necessarily the width, it's just the general lack of creativity. And I'm not sure whether that needs to be a winger or an upgrade on our strikers. I mean, where are you now sitting in terms of what we need to bring in?
I think what I'm expecting from this window, if anything, is possibly a winger, possibly a loan to cover the Lennon injury and to give McNeil maybe some time to rest, because he's not used to this intensity and frequency of playing. Everybody wants him to play every minute of every game at the minute, and rightly so. But at some point, he's probably going to experience a bit of burnout, and his form may drop off. I don't think we should necessarily think if we've got four wide players, that's enough, because this is Burnley and this is Sean Dyche, and when someone gets injured, rightly or wrongly, it seems to take them longer to come back into the team, longer to get to 90 minutes. So I think we should maybe overcompensate for that, and have more than four, because Brady's been out for the best part of a year, and JBG, he's picking up a knock here and a knock there, so I wouldn't worry too much about overcompensating in positions. You only have to look at our goalkeepers to know that Dyche isn't worried about having too many people for a position. Do we need more up front? Well, a few weeks ago I might have said yes. The strikers, you know, Chris Wood started scoring now. Saturday wasn't the greatest advertisement for either of them, I don't think. But hopefully that's just a blip, and hopefully that Wood and Barnes combination can continue to roll on and get us some more goals. Vokes is fit. He's there on the bench. He's ready to come on and score a header here and there. And I think from what I saw of Vidra against Barnsley, I think he just needs time. He looked like a rusty striker who needs more game time. And I don't know how he gets that. But I don't expect Dyche to be going into the market for a striker. I know we've been linked with a Derby right back, a youngster. That may be kind of future planning, you know, for when Barnsley gets nearer to the end of his career. But other than that, I've learned to expect nothing and be happy when something happens in the transfer window.
Surely that can apply to so many things as a Burnley fan. Do you know what? I might have to rename the podcast this week and just say learn to expect nothing. That's inspirational words from producer Matt. Dave, just very quickly before we go on to preview Watford then, what's on your shopping list in terms of players coming in?
I don't think we'll bring too many players in. I think it perhaps does depend on the severity of Aaron Lennon's injury, how long he's going to be out for. I think if he's out for longer than we're letting on, then that might have a bearing on who we bring in and also what we bring in. Matt had mentioned quite rightly the option for loans, which we haven't done too often under Sean Dyche. But that might be something we can look at as an option for the rest of the season in that position. In terms of striking options, yeah, I guess we'd like to have more striking options. But again, you're looking at the quality now of players you're going to get in. It's going to be a big money signing, and probably January isn't the time to do that. I would expect maybe it's more likely if we're going to do that that it might be in the summer. So it's probably going to be one or two. I don't expect to be a lot of signings. Wingers definitely on there. I think one or two of the rumours going around, there's another right back was mentioned as well in the some of the rumours that were going around the last day or so. So we can't read too much into it. I know that we like to keep our cards close to our chest, so it's quite possible that news does come in. It's probably going to be later in the window rather than sooner. And it may well be someone from total left field. I'm not talking in terms of position, but in terms of someone we perhaps wasn't on our radar, we weren't expecting, and it'll be a nice surprise for us in a week or two's time.
Excellent. Well, my money's still on Jay coming, because I feel like that's something that just doesn't seem to be giving up the ghost. So that would be nice. Let's move on then. The Clarets are next week facing Watford side, who have had a really strong season. Not maybe fallen away slightly from the fantastic start that they had, but they see themselves sat in seventh place and kind of look like it's between them, Leicester, Everton and West Ham to see who clinches that seventh place. I was talking to some Watford fans on Love Radio this week on their Watford show, and they were talking about whether or not they should get excited about Europe and what it means as a fan to get in there. But I don't think there's any doubt about it that this is going to be a really tricky side. It would be fantastic to get four Premier League wins on the bounce, but I think a draw would be something I'd be very happy about. Statman Dave, I've got my cheat sheet open. It's looking very multicoloured, is my traffic light system. You want to talk us through some head-to-heads?
Yeah, we've got the previous games against Watford in front of me, as you have, the list of past matches away from home against Watford. We don't have a record going back quite as far as some of the other teams we've looked at this season. The first game we played against Watford was in 1971. And we lost the first three visits to Vicarage Road as well. But overall, we've got a decent record down there. We've had six wins out of 20 in total in all competitions, which is marginally better and certainly a lot better than some of the ones we've looked at this season. When you're looking at certainly the Man Uniteds and Man Cities, we'll obviously be previewing both of those games in a week or so's time. And they do make quite stark reading, whereas the Watford one, at least there are some wins in between to look at. You've actually got to get into the 21st century to find any victories. We had a 1-0 win was our first away win at Watford. That was under Stan Turnant in March 2001. Gareth Taylor scored the goal in a 1-0 win. And then also the following season, February 2002, we had a 2-1 win. That was Ian Cox and Paul Weller with the goals again, with Stan Turnant as manager. And then after that, you've got to go forward to... In between that, we had the one game that wasn't a league game against Watford. We played them in the FA Cup quarter-final, you may recall, in March 2003. A bit of a disappointing day at the end of it, and Burnley had lost that that match 2-0, again down at Vicarage Road. Stan Turnant was the manager. But then after that, we've had a few more victories. They've been sort of... interspersed with defeats, just a couple of draws in there. The victories were under Steve Cotterill. We had a 1-0 win with Ian Moore scoring. That was early on in the season, 2004-05. We also had in November 2007 a 2-1 win under Owen Coyle. That was Andy Gray and Joey Goodjohnson scored for Burnley. And then another win under Eddie Howe as well. We had a 3-1 win down there, a more convincing one. Going more up to date, last season we had a really good win at Watford in that little spell we had. We had five consecutive wins. One of those matches was down at Watford. Sam Vokes and Jack Cork got the goals that day in a 2-1 win, and that was actually our first top flight win at Watford. It was only our second attempt, but it was the first time that Burnley had won an away match at Vicarage Road.
Well, comprehensive stats, and all of that leads me to believe that Burnley will... I don't know. Matt, taking all of that into consideration, obviously there's a bit of a mixed bag there. We've had some good results, some not so good results, and we've had some silly red cards, and we've had some penalties. We've had all sorts away at Vicarage Road. It tends to be a really feisty affair and definitely an entertaining game. I guess, taking all of that aside, what's your gut instinct about how we'll perform on Saturday? Do you think we've got any chance of coming away with a win, or is a draw pretty much what we can hope for?
I think we have a chance. You know, just looking back at kind of Watford's recent kind of form, they're not doing too bad. And like you say, they are pushing for that seventh spot, which may open up, as we all know, into a Europa League spot. And looking ahead of the matches they've got coming up, they've got Brighton and Cardiff coming up amongst Spurs and Liverpool. So they'll certainly be earmarking this one as one that they'd like to get 3 points out of. And, you know, we went away to Huddersfield a couple of weeks back and ground out a victory there. This will be probably, it will be a tougher test. But we've not really, you know, we've not really had to travel since we went to Arsenal. So, I don't know. It's a really tough one to call, I think. I think since Boxing Day, this has probably been the toughest one to really call. And with it being a away match as well, you kind of got to wonder how Dyche will approach it. You've got to wonder who's going to be fit for Saturday, whether JBG will be available for selection, whether Ward and Defoe have done any more today to put themselves up there for selection. Yeah, it'd be interesting to also see if Andre Gray makes an appearance at any point.
Yeah, he's bound to score against us if he does, isn't he? He hates us. Just sticking with you, Matt, one of the comments from the Watford fans this week has been that one of the things they've struggled with this season is breaking down very resilient and very stubborn sides who will defend with their lives. And that sounds kind of familiar. And I think I did comment that Burnley were the absolute masters of that style of football. So that's kind of reassuring that we might be able to go there and either get ourselves a pretty attractive draw or even try and maybe nick one on the break.
Yeah, if that's true, if they do struggle to break teams down, then you know we are one of the toughest tests in the league for that. The worry is that we might get completely focused on that and might forget to actually try and attack ourselves. And sometimes that can just lead to us losing a game 1-0, you know, kind of late on because we haven't focused on trying to get forward and take our opportunities when they present themselves. So I certainly, whilst I'd want us to not concede early, to not give ourselves a mountain to climb, to not have to change our game plan too early in the game. I'd also don't really want to see us completely sitting back, inviting them on, you know, because they've got some quality in there. We saw a quality strike from Cleverley at the weekend, and in that crazy game they had down at Bournemouth in the new year, you saw again that, you know, they've got people who can just pull stuff out of the hat. So I wouldn't want to invite them on too much, but we are organised. That side of our game has returned now post Christmas, so you know there's more confidence that we can shut out a team if we want to.
Definitely, Dave. Final thoughts from you. Are you expecting a particularly big change in terms of approach to the game, and are you expecting us to get anything from the game?
I mean, it'll certainly be a tough test. It's a tougher test than games we've had recently. I think I'd be more than happy with a point. That's not to say that we shouldn't go down there with a positive attitude and see if we can get all 3 points from the game. But I think on balance, if we came away with a point from the game, I think most Burnley fans would be delighted with that. I think I'd be certainly happy with a point. It takes the unbeaten run forward as well. In terms of formation, I think he's probably not going to do a lot different. I think we're going to stick with what we've had in the last few games. That's worked well for us going back to the 4-4-2, subject to availability of players. We do have that option with Stephen Ward and Charlie Taylor, which we tried in the cup game against Barnsley as well. So that might be something that comes into play with Stephen Ward having had another full 90 minutes in the Lancashire FA Senior Cup game this afternoon. So, I think it's more of the same, more resilience. And if we can just grind out a result, whether that's a draw or a win. We've had a few in the past at Watford. Let's hope we can have another one on this weekend.
Amen to that. Well, that is all we've got time for. We've had a look through the game. We've had a look through Watford coming up, and we've decided what's going to happen next week. We've got usual thanks to Great for this episode this week. Thanks, Dave and Matt, for joining me and giving me their pearls of wisdom. And an extra special thanks to Matt for editing this week's podcast. Not only has he given up his time this week to come on the show and be on the panel, he's then going to come off here and then start editing and putting it together for you to download and listen to. So thanks, Matt. I would thank Robbie, but he's disappeared and left us, so no thanks to you. I'd like to thank finally you, the listener, for downloading and listening to this podcast. As ever, your support is very much appreciated, and we would not be here without you. We have got some fantastic things lined up for you in the next few weeks on the show. We are getting fan favourite Andy Payton's going to be on the show to talk about this current Burnley side and his history at the club. We've got Burnley fan Scott Cunliffe, let me just make sure I've got that right. Yes, Scott Cunliffe, who is the fan who's running to every Premier League away game this season to raise a phenomenal amount of money for charity. He's going to be joining us. And we should also have on Gemma Avery as well, who's going to finally give us a bit of an update on the Burnley ladies. I feel like we've been neglecting them a little bit with what's been going on the pitch with the men's first team. So she's going to be giving us an update. We will be back next week, though, for a analysis of Watford away, hopefully with 3 points in the bag. Until then, if you've got any questions or you've got any topics you want us to cover, then please do tweet us in the usual manner or send us an email from the website and we'll have a look through those. Thanks again for listening in. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the None and Never podcast. Until next time.